Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
At a time unprecedented in our history, we are experiencing a global pandemic, and life isn't the way we've come to expect. And there are so many things right now that are undecided, undetermined, up in the air, chaotic. There is no certainty. The thing about that is there are some classics that people are revisiting right now because of the time alone, because of the self-isolating, the whatever it is, the social distancing. Time to maybe re-examine why we're here and what the purpose is. Walden, Life in the Woods, is a classic. And this is something that I really was amazed to see so many people tuning into right now. As I connected to it, I also found somebody who wrote about it and experienced it as a channel, Catherine McIntyre. So this is our interview. A lot of people are experiencing downtime, whether they like it or not. Shut in, locked down, whatever you want to call it, self-isolation. You're not alone. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to play. Catherine McIntyre, you'll have to read her website and her books and her information because she's the Concord writer. Concord, let's get the right effect on that. And then the Thoreau Whisperer. This is so cool because not only does she have this writing aptitude ability, she's also a natural psychic, clairvoyant, astrologer, UFO experiencer, occasional ghost investigator, and a genealogist with ancestral ties to the Mayflower and to writers Margaret Fuller and Henry David Thoreau. So that's kind of the Thoreau thing. When I'm stumbling onto this, and I can't remember how I found you, it's one of my web searches where I go down rabbit holes and figure out where I've surfaced, and I'm like, oh, this will be great, and it's perfect timing, because as people are kind of having an opportunity, if they're not worrying themselves silly, be introspective, there's so much going on here. So I want to start not with the books, but with you and how you came to be where you are and where are you, and all that. So just, can you tell us your story?
It could take a while, but yeah. No, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Michigan, and just a very psychic childhood and typical psychic experiences. I talk about sometimes my sisters who are older, they remember me having invisible friends.
Yay!
You know, it's like strange things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I was always this odd kid. And then I grew up with this sense of just knowing I needed to come east. And that was where I was going. And I told my mom, I was like 12, Mom, I'm moving to Boston. And, you know, we're in the suburbs of Detroit. And she's like, why? what would make you go there?
What's there?
And I was just like, that's where I'm going. Uh-huh. So as soon as I managed to finish college and everything in Michigan, I got in the car and I drove out east. And everything that unfolded sort of from the day I arrived seemed to revolve around Concord and my connections that I felt around there, and my interest in Thoreau was there early on. Mm-hmm. And so I was pursuing those interests from a literary standpoint, but I was also pursuing my psychic stuff and trying to figure out why I was the way I was, you know, what the psychic thing was.
Right. Because
that same mother who didn't know why I wanted movies,
yeah,
kept telling me, you're just dreaming. You're making it up. This isn't true.
Oh, darn. Oh, yeah. I had an invisible friend as a kid, too. I know how that goes. And
okay.
Yeah. And
there you go.
You know, nobody else can see them, so they must be a fantasy or a fiction.
Right.
And that's not the way it works. But,
yeah.
So with that, so you knew, do you remember your invisible friends? Do you remember who was connected to you at that?
My sisters remember me naming them, like one in particular I would refer to. And I think that kind of went on for the first 5 or 6 years, and then that went away.
Yeah.
And then I had the alien abduction experience as a kid.
As a child?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had those experiences going on through my childhood.
Okay, wait. No, you're not going to gloss over that.
It's kind of a big one, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of huge. For one thing that you remember, okay? Mm-hmm. And the childhood experiences, sometimes they do get forgotten or tossed or stuffed because it scares other people when you talk about it. And again, it's just your imagination. So how did that work for you?
There were several incidents and things that I would mention, I would just be laughed at. And my older siblings were all laughing at me. But my dad was very interested in UFO stuff. So I remember at one point being a little kid standing in the driveway with my dad, who was spotting lights in the sky and saying, you know, there's something odd going on up there.
Okay.
And, you know, things like that. So I actually believe that he was also involved in
that. He had a clue. He had a clue.
Yeah. And he told me an interesting story one day about he and his friends, kind of missing time story. Mm-hmm. That had taken place, you know, when he was in his 20s. But anyhow, so, yeah, I mean, I was having those experiences. There was one in particular that I knew was not a dream. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I was being told, oh, you're dreaming here, you know. And I knew there was one that was huge. But I kind of suppressed it. And I just kind of went out with my life. I mean, you grow up and you do things and you go off to college and you, you know, try to have a normal life, even though you're dealing with this awareness and ability and this sort of distant memory. And it wasn't until I was in my like early 30s that, and it was around the time I started listening to Art Bell and, you know, Coast to Coast AM and those programs that were starting to talk about these subjects. And I was starting to hear people talk about things that I knew I had experienced and that were real for me. And then I at that point started to investigate. And it was through making connections in through the MUFON community around the Boston area at that point. And then that just kind of led me on to other connections. But I mean, that was when I really said, this really happened. And when I let that be real for me, it was just a phenomenal change. I mean, you know, sort of, I used to say it was sort of like a psychic crack or something, like it's just this bigger fake thing happened. And it changed me, you know, phenomenally to be able to embrace, I guess, that experience as real and, and then have to work it into my life and my own sense of reality. So
you might like, I just interviewed Ingo Swann's niece and they were reintroducing some of his work. One of them is Preserving the Psychic Child and talks about all, you know, the kinds of things that children experience and then they're forced to stuff or to, you know, completely divorce themselves from. That doesn't help because later on, if they are truly psychic and those other abilities are there, they're going to resurface and they won't have a template or a framework of understanding. That's what's going on. They'll doubt themselves.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like that with part of that.
I've suffered with self-doubt my whole life because of it. And even in The Thorough Whisperer, I write about the experience from that standpoint of somebody that didn't even believe it was real as I was experiencing it, because I, you know, been told my whole life that it wasn't real and it was, I was somehow making it up. So I'm sort of saying, well, look, this was really going on and this is how it happened. And I kind of express some of that as part of the story of my own growth of learning to accept that, you know, no, this is, you know, I really do have these abilities and this was a real experience. This is what was going on.
Well, okay, so let me backtrack here. Catherine McIntyre, just for if you're listening, Catherine McIntyre also has been studying the literary history of Concord, Massachusetts. And so with the writing and all of that that you have, I mean you developed your talent. And I believe that was in order for you, whether you knew it or not, to be able to tell your stories and tell them in a coherent fashion that makes them entertaining and interesting. And the connection with Thoreau brings that the land and the beauty of the natural setting into this, where when people are stressed, and when there's so much chaos, the one thing that you can connect to, and even if you can't get outside, a plant, you know, it's something about the green. And when they call it forest bathing, I believe the Japanese refer to it as forest bathing, that brings you back to center. And that says there's something in the world that that I belong to and that belongs to me. And so I think as you were drawn here to put yourself in that setting, in a way, you're going home.
That's absolutely true. And really, the heart of Thoreau's message is that. I mean, that's really, you know, they think of him as a naturalist and he's all these other things, and he is. But really, the fundamental message in Thoreau's work is always go within. Find that knowledge within you. Find that true connection to the divine and be guided by it. And that's the way you navigate truth. And especially now in this world where you've got so much coming at you and half of it's lies or made up or
whatever. Right, you know,
you really have to have that inner ability to decipher the truth from what's not so true.
Well, part of it for me, especially with the COVID-19 coronavirus issue, for all over the planet, it isn't just one area, one population.
Yeah.
It has to do with we are going through a global shift. And this is the thing they've been talking about for, what, 25, 30, 40 years that we were going to be going through. And I think people had maybe a nicer, happier, not quite so intense, involving lots of death experience for this shift. But it forces us to become more aware of our actions and the results of our actions. And so when I saw your information, I thought this brings into the whole thing of that intuition being a very, very solid, natural ability that right now, if you pay attention, you'll be in the right place at the right time because of it. And not saying, well, I feel, okay, there's a story where you write about the ghost and you say that's the most popular area of your, I think it's the Concord writer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's the most popular part of the West Bay.
Yeah.
My ghost story.
Yes. And so there's one where you're saying you weren't really sure this is involving the ghost Abigail. You were doubting, you know, this, okay, fine, this proved to my boyfriend that I know what I'm talking about. So there's... Dang it.
I'm always looking for validation.
Yes.
Because again, I'm still always that young little girl that was being told her truth wasn't her truth.
But that's what this is about right now, is this thing of... Yeah. Of knowing that these are important abilities and indigenous cultures have used them for centuries. And we're just now going, maybe I need to start paying attention.
Yeah, because it's within everyone. I mean, and that part, our other part of it too is it is what ties us to each other. We are all one. Mm-hmm. And if this experience doesn't show that to everyone, you know, then what will?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter right now what country you're from. Everyone is vulnerable to this thing. And so really, I think it's just really highlighting this enormous connection. And like you said, you know, everything that, and this is a message in the book as well, and something I write in the book, is that everything we think, say, and do has meaning and has impact.
Yeah.
And one of Thoreau's messages is in making that connection, when you go within and you connect to the divine and all that, then your actions come from that place of divine wisdom. And so for, you know, you are... He calls it right action. So then you are taking right action. You are acting in a proper way, a conscious way, where you know that what you do will impact others. And, you know, you're responsible for that in that sense. So it's a very important message, and especially at this time, you know, to realize that. But I also want to say in terms of the current experience is that it's so important to remain positive and not allow your own intentions, your own ability to manifest reality, let's say, be influenced by the fear that's coming at you from the TV.
Right.
You know, the crazy statistics that go over and over and over and that, you know, scare the heck out of you.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't listen to them. You have to maintain that centeredness and then allow that to guide you and not feed your energy, because this is the part I want to get to, is that what we focus on, what we put our energy on, it helps grow that.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to feed the fear. And by allowing yourself to be scared to death or what's on the news or to go to that place, you are feeding the fear. What I want to see people doing is start feeding the healing or start visualizing, manifesting, however, you know, in a reality of healing where this is over. Where, you know, we're all better, and, you know, people, you know, coming back to life, not to feed the fear that's out there right now.
Okay, I believe in miracles, and I believe miracles are our birthright. And a way to manifest a miracle is to say, I believe that our species has the ability to adapt and manufacture a resilience and a resistance to this, because there have been so many people who do carry it with no symptoms and are not affected, then there is a potential for more of us to have that impact without seeing our fellow community, brethren, co-workers fall. All right. So I believe we have the ability to turn this thing. And in our beliefs, then we can bring that to fruition. The thing is, when you worry, you're projecting. And the more you feed that worry, the more you create that projection. And if you don't like your projections, stop worrying and change the darn channel.
Change it. And change the channel, exactly, or turn that thing off.
Yes, it's
and,
like, Quit it.
And change what you're projecting mm-hmm. in your head so that you're going towards a different reality than the one they keep painting for us on the TV.
Yeah. Well, the one that I love, years ago, there was a child, he beat cancer. But what he did was, and I don't know if they coached him or how he got the idea, but he saw the cancer cells. He saw himself fighting these cancer cells. And, you know, here he is in the White Knight, and he saw the cancer cells as the adversary. And he went in and, okay, yeah. you know, and pop, 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 just make them explode. So this is what we have in our ability. These are real talents. These are real yeah. abilities. When they talk about focusing on something, I was reading a thing recently on how you work, and I don't know if it was Qigong or it was a mental ability of some kind to help raise your energy. And the way that you would focus was to focus on an apple and to focus so intently on this apple and blow out everything else. Don't think of anything else, but so that at one point you switch your perspective, your perception to being the apple, feeling the skin, feeling everything about, and all of a sudden you have transposed yourself into another element of all that is, and yet you're still you. And with that ability yeah. to shift your focus, your brain power to say, this is mine, I am, I belong, and I have all of this about me, and then all of a sudden you don't have the body, you have the skin of the apple, you have the core, you have those elements. Mm-hmm. That's manifesting, and that's creation, yeah. and that's focus, intent, solid focus. And that, I believe, if we engage that, that we can turn our immune systems into higher functioning and say, I am yeah. healthy, I am whole, I am healed. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you don't want to sit there and be, you know, I'm weak and I'm waiting for it to get me. You want to be, I am empowered and this thing is not coming to my door.
I'm a ninja. I am a ninja. You do not see me. Yes, you do not see me.
I make a lot of jokes about my ninja dreams because I have a lot of encounters and dreams with things I don't want to deal with. And I call them my ninja dreams because I fight this stuff off.
Oh, that's excellent.
And I realized the other day that this is what needs to happen in the world right now is we need to fight this thing off. And I mean that it, like you just described, yeah. by doing it through yeah. visualization, manifestation, and intent. It is all about your intent. So set the intent that this thing's not going to get me. And right. I also want to say to people, we need to, as far as focusing on that virus, negate it. Mm-hmm. Just get out there and, you know, somehow put energy toward it being just wiped right. out.
And that's my thought, too, is if, for one thing, healing is also part of our ability. And that's what shamans have been doing for centuries as well, is saying, yeah. okay, how do I help this person engage their healing ability? And a lot of times it's distraction. It's giving you something yeah. else to focus on, like when the little boy was working with the cancer cells and making it a game yeah. and going through pop, pop, yeah. pop, pop, you know, and they disappeared. We do that. And it isn't yeah. magic. It's manifesting. And however, it is magical, and I like that too. So,
yeah, I'm a fan of magic too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
there's truth to it, all of it. That, and it really comes down to where we put our power, where we put our energy, because we are so powerful. And that's one of the things in the book as well that he emphasizes, is the power of the individual on what we can create. And, you know, what we can create right now is healing.
I want to know, with the book, The Thoreau Whisperer, how did you connect? How did that start for you?
Well, you know, so back to Concord. So, I come out and I lived in the Cambridge area for a long time. And I, you know, basically because I was so young and Concord's a sleepy town and I wasn't ready to go there yet. So it took me a few years. And then, you know, I finally got old enough. I was like, okay, I'll move out there. And once I did, then I started, I joined the Thoreau Society. And I met a man through the Thoreau Society who became my mentor. It was Brad Dean. He was a scholar of Thoreau, and he actually was the man that edited and published some of Thoreau's unfinished manuscripts, which is a really cool thing.
Wow.
And made him very famous back in the 90s and the early 2000s. Not somebody I was in touch with on a regular basis. So I did not yet hear of his death when I saw him in my dining room in Cambridge in 2006, mm-hmm. 11 days after he died. And I had a communication with him.
Yeah.
And then I, later that night, confirmed, in fact, that he had died. I mean, my reaction was like, why am I talking to Brad like I talked to Mom and Dad? You know, he can't be dead. Oh, you know.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, he was.
What's really funny is as we're talking here, the two cats in the back room are having a fight. Before we started talking here, you were telling me about the construction work that might be happening in the background. And now
yes.
I don't have construction work.
I've got cats fighting.
Okay, guys. I'm like, can you hear this? I'm thinking, well, one's a big fluffy, oh, the orange tabby like Garfield. And then his brother is kind of a thinner, more svelte black tuxedo cat with white paws and white whiskers. He's beautiful, but he's the scrappier of the two.
I had a white cat, black. I guess she was a tuxedo, but she had the white with the black touches. And I write about her in my first book because I heard a voice from her one day.
Yes.
So I write about her as my, you know, sort of, I used to call her my famous, Concord's famous talking cat.
Yeah.
But she, you know, I really did. I mean, we would communicate telepathically on things. And actually, I dreamt with her one time, which mm-hmm. don't ever recommend that because cats are kind of gross. she was dreaming about eating. And I mean, suddenly I had my face in her cat food bowl, which is not where I wanted my face. Like,
oh,
you know, in the
yeah.
dream, I was like eating wet cat food.
And I'm sure she was just so thrilled. Oh, see, it's
she
really good.
It. Yeah.
It's good.
Totally
I'm
it.
Sharing with
but
you.
I woke up and I just looked at her and I said, don't you ever do that to me again, meaning pull me into your dreams. Don't you ever do that. It was so wild.
Oh.
But that was my famous talking cat. But in Honor and Concord, I write about, I was sitting up late writing one time and I suddenly heard this woman say, a young woman's voice say, Mommy, where are you? I mean, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. There was nobody around.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, she came barreling out of the bedroom, running up to the side of my chair and stopped and looked right up at me.
Yeah.
And I realized she had woken up, you know, on the bed at night when we're usually in there sleeping. And
mm-hmm.
and I was at my desk, but she didn't know where I was. And it just, for some reason, I heard it as a voice.
Isn't that neat?
And saying, Mommy, where are you?
I've had those things happen too. There's one recent, I'll say that in a minute, but another cat a while back who was my writing cat, whenever I was at the computer or writing, she was right there in a little basket or beside me or in my lap, and I called her my muse. And at one point, I adopted for a short time, I took care of a dog who I didn't realize, but he was a predator, and I left the house, I came home, and the two cats were up on a table. And I said, what happened? What happened? And it was so funny because I heard this voice. He chased us. Really? What happened? We ran. They're like, get rid of him. But they didn't say that. But they said, he chased us. We ran.
Yeah.
And I realized that was her voice. And she was telling me.
Yeah.
So
you could hear the voice. So it's not like their mouths are moving or anything.
No.
But somehow there's a voice that was projected.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
one recently, the black one I was talking about earlier, when he is out, I will hear a meow. He doesn't
yeah.
say anything, but I'm halfway awake or asleep. And twice he has woken me up. The first time I looked up, I got up and I stood up and I saw him on top of the car looking through the window directly at me like, yeah, uh-huh. And then the second time, I thought, what the heck? So I went to the back door. He was on the porch patio table looking at me like, it's about time. And there he is.
Yeah.
But it's like, good grief, dude. I'm sleeping.
yeah,
that's the problem. Now open the door. So they connect to us. They connect to us.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
It's nice to talk with you about this because that's why I wanted to connect, because right now there are so many of us who are in limbo and,
mm-hmm.
and wondering what's going to happen next and what can we do during this time. Part of that is that mental attitude, PMA, positive mental
yeah.
attitude of these are things that we are here to experience. And as we experience
yeah.
them, we overcome and we grow and we improve and we upgrade and we level up our abilities to, for one thing, endure stressful times and
mm-hmm.
to either, you know, be a support to somebody else or an inspiration or an influence or a rock, wherever you are, all of us have a purpose and we're here for a reason. It isn't time to drop the ball and just, you know, curl up in a fetal position and say, all right, come get me. No, 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 no. it's to go
yeah.
back to center. And that's why I thought you were in the perfect place right now to be able to offer, especially when, you know, you've had to go through the hard knocks of it doesn't exist. It's not real. to I'm living it, I am real, and it does exist. So there.
But I heard it. Yeah. Yep. No, it's true. And it's, some of it is, it's so important too, that the fact, I mean, to me, that these things are real. It tells us that there's so much more to us than this physical body, and that the limitations of this physical world. And so once that all opens up to you, then as bad as this is, what's going on right now, you see it from a slightly less attached place, so that you realize whatever happens there, we're going to go on, you know, in some way or form.
Right.
we do continue.
Yeah. Well, part of it is, and I work with my guides on this, it's like everybody has an exit plan, dude. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So yeah, nobody gets out alive. And I'm not the first one who said that, but the guides remind me.
I always like to say that, but then we do, because we really do live on.
The body, yeah, you're just getting rid of
the body. You're going to depart with the body.
The vehicle, which, you know, some days I'd like to upgrade, and other days I'm perfectly fine. But
I always think of this as like cars.
Uh-huh,
like by now, if this was my car, I would have gotten a new car by now.
Right.
You know? Because I'm getting, you know, this one's getting kind of old.
Uh-huh.
It's time
new
for me
paint,
to get out to the new car dealership. Too bad we can't do that with our physical form.
I know. But, well, that's what they're working toward, you know. That's all this, that's what this augmented reality and all the extra parts and all that.
Right.
That's what we're working towards. So someday that'll be real. I want to go back to that ET, because the abductions, you said it really stood out and you knew it was real. What happened with that?
That was what came out later then. And when I was in my 30s, then I could go back and really say, no, this really took place. And I went into some regressions and hypnosis and that to help bring out some of the stuff. But I didn't even have to get hypnotized
right.
or go through any of that
right.
for this particular event. But it had to do with seeing little grays in the room. And I mean, I'm saying this is something that took place when I was like seven,
mm-hmm.
six or seven. And feeling the touch of them, feeling that they have like a vibrational feel. You know, there's like a vibrational thing to them
uh-huh.
when they touch you. And having that experience and just being freaked out and calling for my mother and her coming in. And it was so crazy. I had a older brother who, when I was like seven, he'd be like 19 or something. And we had given him as a joke at Christmas, a back scratcher. It was a battery run thing. And it would do this little thing on your arm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when those little beings touched me, that's what it reminded me of. So I remember telling my mother that my sister, who was just dead asleep in the other bed, had gotten like a back scratcher thing. It was like,
uh-huh.
you know, touching me with it, because that's what it felt like. But I knew it wasn't, because at the same time, I saw the little beings when my mother would come in, I could psychically see them scatter. And like one went in the closet, one went in the dining room. And then when she would leave, they'd come back. Well, anyways, eventually the whole thing began. I got beamed up. I don't know. I got
mm-hmm.
pulled out of that room for a while and then put back.
Uh-huh.
It was such a powerful experience that I never forgot it and never dismissed it.
Yes. Yes. And that's what
it
they talk
took
about.
It took me a long time to come to terms with it.
Uh-huh. That's what they talk about, is that when the memory is that off kilter, totally disconnected from what we consider real, it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
You stuff it
no.
and you keep it and you wonder, you examine it every now and then, what the heck was that, from all different sides? And until you are able to either integrate it or reconcile it and transmute it into, okay, you know, I'm still here, and gee, that's here too.
Yeah.
Do you still have any kind of connections, awareness of that presence?
I think it's been a long time since I was actually taken,
mm-hmm.
let's say.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point along the way, I was like, that's it. Don't ever, you know, never again. Don't leave me the hell alone.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's pretty much my attitude toward them. So they kind of leave me alone. But telepathically, I can connect.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's part of it, is there's an awareness that this element is present. And that right now, I don't think I'm that important.
Yeah. Well, I always feel like they have they know what I'm doing.
Yeah, yes.
I feel like I'm watched. And I write about in the Thrall Whisperer, that period of time in my 30s had come and gone, and I had done what I did then to investigate. Then there was like a long flat period. When
mm-hmm.
I got back into, after seeing Brad, and then I got into the channeling, I met somebody who had connections to Dr. John Mack in Cambridge. And it has since become a good friend. And I became part of a group of what was sort of the remnants of his collection of people in Cambridge.
Oh, wow.
And met with them a number of times. And it was real interesting because on one of the meetings that took place at my home at that point, when I was living in Bedford, Mass, this was during the Channeling, it's right next door to Concord. But the day before, I said to Thoreau, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, Henry, you know, feel free to drop by tomorrow. I'm having this cool meeting. You know, come to the meeting tomorrow at my house.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, he did. It got real interesting because I was kind of, you know, really, you know, a little uncomfortable having all those people, which probably 10, 12 of us, whatever, in this very sacred space for me at that time, because that's where the channeling was taking place. And I suddenly had all these people in there. So I was kind of a little nervous and uncomfortable with that, not really paying attention. But then I kept kind of, my eyes kept getting drawn over by, you know, kind of next to where I was sitting in this chair, was sort of where the TV was. I kind of kept looking and not really getting it. And all of a sudden, this friend of mine, she says to me, what does the role look like? And, you know, it's so funny. And I like pointed to the picture of him in a little frame on my bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, he's right there. You know, so it was really funny. So it was him. So he had come to join the party. So that was a lot of fun.
Well, okay. And so with that connection, I mean, I know I had divine intervention from that other element in 2009. And I know because they shifted my timeline. They showed me things. They told me things. Things happened. I heard things. The animals responded, which is always my clue. Told to go into a certain room of the house and not to come back out for a certain amount of time. And so the animals would all come in too. I didn't talk to them. I did not call them in. But when I got that message telepathically, everybody went to the room and stayed there about 45 minutes or so, and then could come back out. But it was a time shift. And so it was just, you know, these kinds of things that I have had happen make me more, I think, comfortable knowing that my reality has a certain relevance. And I'm not the only one who's doing and going through this, but boy, it's hard to talk about.
Yeah, even now. But I mean, it's a whole different world now than it was 20 years ago or 25 years ago.
Yes.
You know, thanks to Art Bell and you know, Coast to Coast and George Norrie and all that show did. I mean, I track it to that because it was such a huge change to have that information available nightly.
Well, that's why I heard Ingo Swann. And well, I listened to him before he even started doing this supernatural stuff, when he was still having so-and-so caller from Bedford and somebody else caller from California duke it out for 20 minutes. And you know what he's doing. You know darn good and well what he's doing while they're duking it out for 20 minutes. He's out having a smoke, okay? That's just radio.
That's probably true.
Yeah, it's like, and just don't get locked out of the building because that happens too.
Yeah.
but so that was what he was doing to start out with. And then he got into all the paranormal UFO stuff, which was so much fun and so, you know, better. But then you hear the guy who had the time, who went back in time, the time traveler that everybody's still trying to figure out, was it real?
Yeah.
Was it real? I don't know if it was real.
Yeah.
And, you know, so stuff like that, because he hung up and they never heard from him again. He went back to his original time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm blowing it out of proportion.
No, I was there listening to all that stuff too. Yeah. It was just such a wonderful thing to have that, and it continues to be. And also people like John Edward and the show that he had on TV kind of demonstrating his abilities, and James von Prague, and a lot of these people that came, you know, were coming forward and talking about the fact that we live on. I mean, this was huge stuff for me, and I think it's huge for everyone that it was okay to talk about this stuff more. And so now then it became more prevalent. So now we're just full of TV shows that are on the paranormal. And, and it's great. I love it. I love seeing all this stuff.
Well,
because these were topics that we couldn't talk about.
Right.
And that I was being called foolish for believing in.
It was tough to find that stuff. Because I found Pat Rodegast, Emmanuel's book, back in 1987 or somewhere in there. And I was familiar because of my grandmother with Robert Monroe and the things she wanted desperately to have an out-of-body, an intentional out-of-body experience. And that's where she was like, couldn't ever quite make that. And I had them just, you know, remembering as a child. And then and definitely in 1987, there was a huge experience there. One was a dental back in the, you know, 14 or so. And I came out and realized, I would be the one looking at my teeth over his shoulder and all the blood as they extracted my wisdom teeth. That was really interesting. And I realized I could not have seen that from the position that I was in.
Right. Wow.
So none of the others have been drug induced. I think, you know, that was the assist from the knock them out, because four wisdom teeth are impacted and coming out. So that was there. And I think I just didn't want to have anything go wrong while I was out. So I was making sure he was doing everything the right way. Okay. Yeah. So you're working on a third book. So the first one is a setup for this, how you relocated and you set up and you started channeling. The second one is more, okay, so what's the difference? Spell it out.
Well, I kind of, you know, I sort of had this amazing experience in Concord. The first one I wrote, it's a memoir, because it's me in Concord as, somebody with a psychic ability. And so I'm picking up all these images from the past. And, you know, so I'm reading about these authors. I'm talking to them. I realize I'm communicating with them, and I'm getting real images from the past. So in that book, I'm coming to terms with my abilities, but I sit down to record some of the stuff I'm getting, and it goes into becomes a fictional story where I have the writers from the past living as characters in present day. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of fun, that book, because you go from the memoir to the fiction, and then within the fiction, windows open up on their lives in the past. And those windows, the short vignettes, are based on information that I was receiving psychically, sort of just glimpses into their past, which was fun to do. So that was that book. And then the evolution of that is, at the end of that story, I have myself up on Author's Ridge in Concord, where the writers there are buried, and I was just sort of playfully connecting, you know, trying to connect with them. I mean, I didn't, at that point, didn't really think it was possible or think I was going to actually be doing it. Uh-huh. So I'm just kind of up there playfully, you know, doing that, and I kind of record what happened. And then the thing was that when the story resumes in the next book, which is The Thorough Whisper, it's 6 years later, and I'm actually doing it. You know, it's like I'm now actually connecting to them. Mm-hmm. And that's quite a transition. And it's also an older, more mature me, kind of more accepting, but really going through that final acceptance that, hey, I do have this ability, and this is real. And, you know, Thoreau is standing in my living room. You know? So, or at least manifesting an image of himself standing in my living room. It was a lot of fun. And it was wonderful, too, because, you know, like he tuned in Brad's energy earlier. He's wonderful. And the experience was so magical for me. But also, I say at one point in the book that it was so amazing because I was surrounded by so much love. You know, there was just this sense of love around me during the whole thing. And it just sort of, I don't know, just the most magical, amazing experience becoming. I'd come in from a bike ride and I'd sit down at my computer and I could just go right into it and I'd be connecting to him.
I was reading your website where you said the title of the Thoreau Whisperer was originally Thoreau's Wise Silence.
Thoreau's Wise Silence.
I love that. I love that. The oversoul, the quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson.
I wish I had called it that, but, you know, I was encouraged to come up with a catchy, you know, catchier title, but... Uh-huh. But no, to me, it's always Thoreau's Wise Silence. And that's, again, it gets back to the most important part of Thoreau's teaching. It's just that go within. And that's what, you know, Emerson spoke of and wrote of as well. That's a very transcendental idea.
I'll share the quote.
And that's what it's all about. If you can't reach that place, you know, within you, then you really are out of touch with who we are. Because we are evolving spirits. And we are tied together by that, you know, the source from which we come. And the way to get to that source is to first go within, to connect to that spark of it within you.
Do you know that quote right off the top of your head, the Ralph Waldo Emerson, the Oversoul quote?
I can read it out of my book. Here we go. We live in succession, in division, in parts and particles. Meantime, within man is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty to which every part and particle is equally related. The eternal one.
Okay, so as we're talking to you and learning about all of this, what does because you said Mom was giving you a hard time about the fantasy and the fiction and you must be dreaming. How does she like your dream now that it's real?
My mother passed away, you know, a while back.
So. Did she see this come to fruition at all?
She did not. No, it was interesting because it was the 1-year anniversary of her death when I was putting out, like I was, that's what I was doing. I was in my apartment in Cambridge and I was standing in what was my sacred space. I had this bookshelf and that, like a built-in, and I had little sacred things there that were important to her or important to other people who had passed, whoever was sort of my prayer table kind of. Mm-hmm. And I was standing there trying to connect to her that day when I connected to Brad. When I, before I knew he was dead. Uh-huh. And that's how that whole thing started. So she was gone 1 year at that point. I'm sure she's quite aware of what's going on and has been. So she's fine.
There's also a connection.
Now, because there's a transition for her when she got there. I think she came more into herself because she was very psychic herself, mm-hmm. but just been taught to deny.
Yes. Yeah, with the community you're in, some of those things are very oppressive. And, in a way of trying to appear normal, you have to, in some way, shape, or form, disguise yourself. Oh, yeah, I'm really normal. Oh, that was a mistake. Oh, I must have just beginner's luck. Or it was just, slough it off as a totally accidental thing and say, whoops, that wasn't supposed to be out loud.
Exactly.
Shoot, I forgot.
Great. Did I say that out loud?
Yeah, that wasn't me. That was my evil twin. Okay, so as we're trying to bring our best game forward, I like the fact that it's easier now to talk about that intuition, that psychic ability, like you've had from the time that you were a kid. And so how do you see things differently now that you have full permission and full authority to admit and to, to bring this as part of who you are instead of having to hide it and disguise it?
I don't know. I write my book. I'm not sure how to answer that. I'm sorry.
How is your life different?
My life is different in that I will talk openly about this stuff, all of it. Because, I feel like, I better do it because, people are still reluctant, some of them. Mm-hmm. I know some of the people in the abduction community in particular, they don't like to go out and say, hey, I was abducted.
Right.
Because apparently that's still a taboo. But, for me, I'm like, hey, that was the reality. That's how I experienced it. So I think what I do is I just try to be truthful about it. And that's why I told the story in the book the way I did. I figured, if I just said, hey, I channeled Thoreau, here he is, this is what he said. And if that's the way I put it out, nobody's going to believe me. Not that they're going to believe me now, but at least if I tell it as this is how it happened, this is why I believe that it was real and why I believe it was him. And this is, and aside from all that, this is what he had to say. And whether or not it was him, the information that's in that book is really useful and really powerful, I think, and inspires people. And it was interesting what you were saying before when you're picking up on Brad and his interest in the beauty of it, because he once came through and said to me that I write with the words of flowers. And it was the most beautiful thing.
And I said he's blooming.
Ever said that.
Yeah, I said blooming in association with him. Yeah, it is.
He's used that phrase before that he loves the way I write because I write with the words of flowers, is how he put it.
Uh-huh.
And that was my big thing, too. When I was putting the book together, I thought, as crazy as some people might think this is, whether they believe me, yada, yada, the whole thing, I just want this book to be beautiful. And I want the experience of it to be beautiful.
Right.
And I hope I succeeded. I think a lot of people have told me that I have because it seems to inspire them in that. And there are just some really beautiful passages in the book. And I'm not trying to credit myself. I'm trying to say through me, through Brad, through Henry, that the sort of collaboration that took place and the result was just some really, really pretty stuff.
Okay,
really
okay.
Nice images, nice ideas.
So could you pick one to share? Because the listening audience is, we don't have the benefit of having the book in front of us. And we want to go either, to the library when everything's back open again or to a bookstore or online and check it out. So what would you share?
Okay.
Again, Catherine McIntyre and now two books. But the Thoreau Whisperer is what we were talking about today.
And here's something about this is about the wise silence. It is in the place of the wise silence that truth is revealed. Meditators sit for hours with closed eyes, attempting to reach that place. It is there for all, if only they can settle their minds long enough to reach it. It is warm and bright and brilliant. It is all things, and all things are it. In the place of the wise silence, peace, integrity, and truth exist.
And that's like beautiful. That. It's the simplicity.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, part of it. You know, when you're trying to meditate or trying to calm down and reach that transcendent state, a lot of it has to do with getting rid of all of the superficial and all of the embellishments and just being quiet.
Yeah. The purest tranquility is what I felt at Walden. It was, for me, a place that I could go to for simple privacy, to allow myself the silence I needed to find that place within. It was not that it was so far from society, but any distance is far enough if you have experienced it, if you have established a private area about yourself where you can withdraw and reexamine yourself. And that is what I did there.
Mm. You have so much insight and ability, especially, this should give you an idea, when they come to your site and the ghost one is the one that's the most popular. Your story is important too. I would like to see some of your stories as part of that next, you know, beyond this third one, the next one, saying how this all has worked in your life. Like, the, you know, with the cats and going on to that feeling of, you know, the cat taking you into the dream. Now, my cats haven't done quite that. I have.
Oh, you're lucky.
Yeah, they've gone with me, you know, but yeah. Not, I haven't been forced to eat cat food.
I'm telling you, I may never get over that.
I know, it's like, whoa. I do remember being in a cat body, though, and being in the box and going into a box. And I was like a normal tabby cat. And I went into the box and I'm like, wow, this is why they like boxes. It was like a little cooking oven. And I was just so comfortable. I was just in there like, whoa, this is great. And I thought, that's the, you know, the simplicity, the beauty of being a cat, that a box is all you need.
Yeah.
But those, yeah. You know, those are real experiences that we don't often hear about and get to share. And so with all of your background and, uh-huh. You know, the writing, you have the ability to tell these stories that also bring these other elements of spirit into the equation. And that's
what I did. That's what I've done in the two books, I think. they're both memoir, and they're contained, you know, one contains a fictional story and the other one contains the words from Thoreau. Mm-hmm. So I really do. I tap into my personal experience all the time. The next book that I'm writing is going to be a novel, but it is, again, based on my own experience.
So I love that.
I don't know how else to write.
No, that's great. I think that's fantastic. See, I wanted to go into this cold without reading the books because I thought, you know, there's so much content in your life, in your story, in all of this, how you were drawn there, that, you know, you don't have to have the book. You can tell the story and get an idea. So now that makes me want to see what you've written and how you've incorporated it into your books. And that's the whole point of doing an interview. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
It's like, well, to, I mean, keep people to wanting more. Yes, it's like, okay. Yep. You don't want to give them everything. You want to give them a tease. And then they say, hey, it's over? What? Hey, that's... So that's a success. All right.
Yeah.
I've taken, you know, we've gone all different directions. I've taken you all across, you know, the various planes of the ghosts and the ETs and the, we didn't get into the astrology. Darn.
No, that's okay. Didn't talk about Bigfoot either. <That's> okay. Okay. That was my latest thing, is Ronnie LeBlanc interviewed me for his latest book. Ronnie from the Expedition Bigfoot from the Travel Channel.
And we didn't talk about that. No, no.
Have
you had a Sasquatch experience?
Well, I had,
yeah,
I hadn't actually seen one, but when Ronnie and I went out to go exploring a little bit and then to have our interview, I definitely tuned into them for a bit.
They're telepathic.
He wrote about, he's got a chapter in his latest book, which is one of his latest Monsterland series of books, called Channeling Catherine. That would be me.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I had no idea when I went to go look for crystals at Board Camp Crystal Mine that they were Sasquatch Central.
And
oh, wow.
They're definitely telepathic. And as a matter of fact, right here where I am working on the thing where I set my copy, I have the stone with the crystals on it that's shaped like a foot. I actually have two, one left foot and one right foot. One of them that was telepathically told, here, pick this up. But I'm like, no, I'm going to, this is a sacred space. I don't want to pick anything up. And again, pick it up. And so when I reached down to pick it up at my feet, it looked like a rock. I turned it over. The rock's all covered with crystals. And it's a small, about an inch and a half. And it looks like a foot. And yeah, I keep that here. That's just it was a gift. And so there you go. Yeah. It's telling, yeah. Was there a message or just a hello? What did you get?
There was a little bit of a message, but it was just the whole thing was kind of, people can read his book.
You have to read his book.
Yeah, you kind of have to read his book. No, there wasn't really that much to it, but it was sort of like it kind of went on for a day or two after it. Kind of figuring out what was going on.
Were they playing with you?
Yeah, a bit.
Uh-huh, yeah,
like,
okay.
Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's like,
I feel like, sometimes when you, when you're tuned up and you have this ability, that when they, let's say those out there, who have a telepathic ability themselves and they can tune into you.
Yes.
They will.
Yes.
If they find you, they can't be.
Absolutely. Wow. Anywhere. You don't have to go there. They can, they're not stuck. They're interdimensional. Yeah. So
exactly.
I did.
Yeah. So they kind of came on board for a couple of days, and then I kind of sent them home. So,
just to check out the neighborhood.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Getting to know me.
Okay, so. Fine. Well, now we have to stop, okay? But
yep.
I wish. This is one of those things where there's so many levels and so many layers. It's just you have to get the whole bag of potato chips, all right? So people who are listening, this is just the first chip.
I'll be happy to come back another time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Your life isn't over, man. You've got more dramas and adventures to share. And we just,
there's
a lot. Yeah. We didn't touch all the ghost stuff on your site. So,
No, we're there too much.
We just teased it. So
yeah.
For people who want to connect with you, the TheroWhisperer.com, and then there's the Concord Writer.
Yeah, my website, the latest website is TheroWhisperer.com. The original website was theconcordwriter.com.
Okay.
Concord Writer. And that's the Concord Writer is Thoreau. People always go, oh, you're the Concord Writer. I'm like, no, that's Thoreau. Henry is the Concord Writer. I would never call myself that. But I am the Thoreau Whisperer.
Okay. Well, the deal is with the Concord Writer, you've got the astrology, ghostly, essay, spirit. You've got all sorts of stuff up there.
Yeah. A bit of information there. I wrote a couple of essays that went into the Thoreau Bulletin, which I liked it. That because they're kind of a stuffy bunch, and so they kind of liked it enough that they put it in their little academic brochure, whatever this bulletin is.
Which is a compliment.
That's a good thing.
That's a compliment.
It was a compliment. Yeah, and especially because the politics essay I write about in the Thoreau Whisperer was influenced by Thoreau.
Yeah.
I'm like, they should have published that one.
Amazing.
For his words. So, yeah.
Okay. I like it when you, the Thoreau Whisperer, it's clear that Thoreau was right when he wrote in Walden, the universe is wider than our views of it.
Yeah.
So here we are listening and learning about all the wonderful aspects of the universe that we have yet to conquer. And even to fathom. So thank you. I appreciate your time.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Don't stop writing. Catherine's website is thethoreauwhisperer.com. And it says on the site, if you're ready for a trip through the looking glass, then you're ready to read a book like this. Definitely worth it. I haven't read it yet. Of course, now that I've got all the information about Catherine, Bigfoot, ETs, ghosts, mediums, what's not to like? Check out my website, wendyscoffeehouse.com, and I'll put links to Catherine's information as well. And whatever you're doing, remember, there is so much going on that we can't account for, that our science cannot explain at this time. It doesn't mean that it isn't happening and it isn't real. It's worth being curious and checking it out and connecting your own dots, because if you experience something, it's your reality, and that's how we learn. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And stay curious.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.